This is Jeff from the 30-something movie podcast, and you are listening to Jason and Dee on what is currently considered to be the most recent episode of the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. We are here to talk about the Tears for Fears album, Songs from the Big Chair, released 39 years ago this month. Jason, isn't it funny how time flies?
Yes. Yes, I love this album. I can't wait to dive into it. I owned it. It really ruled the summer of 1985.
This album for me was... Well, I put it this way. I've said this to you before. I think I may have even mentioned it last episode. This album was like that girl in high school that you thought was kind of cute and kind of forgettable. And then you come back for your 39-year-old class reunion or whatever. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in love with her.
Right.
So I got to, you know, we dive in. I re-listen to this thing and I'm like, holy cow, how did I not know how good this entire album is?
You know, I had the same kind of experience because when you're a little kid, when I was 12 when this came out.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, these songs are great. They're fun. They're catchy, you know, but you don't realize how complex and how deep they are at 12 years old.
Yeah, we were having a conversation with our Shirley fans that we have a text group with. By the way, guys, if you want to join our group, go to patreon.com/Shirley Podcast. And if you just want to follow us, it doesn't cost a thing to follow us. You can see what our Patreon episodes are and decide whether you want to join or not. It's cheap to join if you do decide and you get access to those episodes. But also, we have a continuing text exchange with almost all of our Patreon members. And today, we were talking about this thing that seems to happen now with songs that you don't have guitar solos or piano solos or drum solos or saxophone solos or any of those things.
Or long intros, right?
Right, or long intros. And you go back and you listen to the songs of 39 years ago, nearly 40 years ago, and at that era, all of them had it. Like, you didn't have a song that didn't have a guitar solo in it. And the problem is that all of the people making music now thinking that the Gen Z doesn't have the attention span to sit through a musical solo. Well, let me just tell you guys, the songs off of these albums are favorite songs for my 16-year-old and my 14-year-old and my 12-year-old. And for us, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but Shout was the song of this album, right? Like, for you and me, like, Shout was the big hit in 1985.
Right.
For them, literally before we came to record tonight, I was like, Avery, of these three songs, Shout, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Head Over Heels, which one is the best? And she's like, I don't think I know Shout.
Right.
And Caleb's next to her and he's like, what? You don't know Shout? Are you crazy? I'm like, dude, she doesn't know what she doesn't know. It's okay. But even he was like, it's Head Over Heels. And she was like, I like them both a lot, but it's probably Everybody Wants to Rule the World. 16-year-old Cole, 100%, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Didn't know Shout. But the fact is that these guys have the attention span. My kids have the attention span to listen to these songs with long intros, great sax solos, great guitar solos, and they prefer it. So wake up, music producers of the day, give some credit to our listening audience, and let's put some music talent behind the songs we're making today.
I've got to tease up for you on this. So yeah. You mentioned the length of the songs.
Yeah.
There is a lyric in one of the songs that you know well
yeah.
That makes a reference to the length of the songs on this album.
I mean, the fact is that even in the 80s, the record producers were like, yeah, we don't have, this is too long, we got to cut it short. And they do. They totally reference it in one of these other songs.
I almost fell down when I heard that.
So guys, we're talking about an album that's nearly 40 years old at this point, and it is still incredible. This is a great album to listen to with your kids. There's all kinds of history behind the band, but I really just want to jump right in. Before we do that, we have to briefly talk about how we got the title of this album.
I have wondered this for 39 years now, right? So the title of the album is called Songs from the Big Chair.
Yep.
What the heck is the big chair?
Well, lay down and we can talk about it.
That's Have you seen the 1976 TV movie starring Sally Field called Sybil?
No, I have not, but I am well aware of of what it's about. I know it's the multi-personality. The actual woman's name was not Sybil. It was Shirley Ardell Mason, but there's a lot of skepticism about whether she had as many multiple personalities as she did or not.
Right. So it's about this woman who has multiple personalities, which part of the reason why they chose this title is because each song on this album has a different personality.
Ah, that's true. Oh, that's great. That's great. And so just as it relates to the movie, the idea was that with all of these multiple personalities that she had, she's being psychoanalyzed by the psychiatrist. And the only way that she can prevent herself from using her different personalities is when she's sitting in her big chair.
That's it.
The chair that she talks to the psychoanalyst from.
She only feels safe when she's sitting in the big chair.
Yeah.
Now, this album, just for the record, went 5 times platinum in the U.S. alone.
Yep.
Sold 10 million copies worldwide, released February 25th, 1985, we talked about, and was the album of 1985 with maybe only one exception, which we'll talk about next week.
Yeah, we are here to compare this album to the Wham album.
Make it big. Wake me up before you go, go.
Don't leave me hanging on like a yo-yo. Wake me up. Guys, we'll cover that one next week, but for now, we are jumping in. Song number one on the album, Shout. Shout, shout, let it all out. These are the things I can do without. Come on, I'm talking to you. Come on. What an iconic, unmistakable intro. You love those bells. They come in with the strong chorus at the beginning of the song. Fan freaking tastic right out of the gate.
Yeah, so this song was one of the ones that went to number one, hit number one in the U.S. August 3rd, 1985. Here's the interesting thing. The release schedule in the United States is different than the one in the U.K.
Right.
So in the U.K., this is like the third single. In the U.S., it's the second single. If you're listening to the U.K., you're going to be like, wait a minute, what? Summer of 1985? What are you talking about? Well, in the U.S., it was big in the summer of 85.
Yeah, huge. It wasn't just big. It was huge. This is a tidal wave of a song as far as the U.S. is concerned.
I bet they played this video once an hour on MTV.
I couldn't stop singing this song at 10 years old. Like, I just couldn't do it. I mean, it was too intoxicating not to do it. And then I got it in my head, why doesn't Shout the fabric detergent use this? Shout, shout, get the stains out.
Yeah, so it's interesting. When it was created, Roland Orzabal he kind of came up with the words and thought, well, this is just kind of a chorus for people to sing along. It's not really a song, just something we can use in our concerts.
Yeah, I remember as a kid talking to my brother about this, and he was like, these guys did this scream therapy, and that's where they got this idea for this song, right? So, you know, speaking of psychoanalysts and Sybil and all that,
right?
There's this psychoanalyst from the late 60s, early 70s called Arthur Janoff, right? He does what he calls primal therapy, where he, with his patients, dives into their childhood pain. And so he comes out with this book called The Primal Scream. Sounds like, oh, hey, my brother was right. These guys are tapping into this. We know, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, where the name of the band comes from, and it is straight from Arthur Janoff.
Yeah.
But this book, he writes this book about his primal therapy, and he sends a couple of like preview copies to some famous people, including John Lennon. John Lennon totally buys in. A couple of other famous celebrities buy in, and all of a sudden, he is a world-renowned guy. Well, this is early 70s, like 1970, basically.
Okay.
And we know that Tears for Fears gets together. I mean, they become Tears for Fears in 1981. But before that, they were devotees of Arthur Janoff.
Yeah, so I was telling you, I read this article. Roland Orzabal said, we were evangelical about Arthur Janoff. He said, the only band I could really compare ourselves to would be like U2. So U2 took pop, rock, and combined it with the teachings of Jesus, right? Their Christian faith, whereas Tears for Fears took pop, rock, synth rock, and combine it with the teachings of Janoff. And here you go, Tears for Fears, Primal Scream Therapy, Shout.
Right. And then part two is Roland Orzabal says, no, that's actually not what it's about. It's not about the Scream therapy.
Right.
He's like, what? This is about rebellion and all this. I'm like, really?
Are you sure?
Yeah. No, he, but here's the part two of that. There could be the reason that he could be saying that is that they actually got to meet Arthur Janoff in the mid 80s.
Okay.
They met him, and this goes back to your and my experience with Lou Ferrigno. Don't meet your heroes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so they met him, and they were completely disillusioned. They said he had just become completely Hollywood. He was not interested in talking to them about psychosis or psychoanalysis or any of that stuff. What he wanted them to do was write a musical for him.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I was with you when you met Lou Ferrigno, by the way. I was bad for you.
Yeah.
So here's the interesting thing. When Roland Orzabal wrote this chorus, just a simple shout protest chorus, he went over and he sang it to Ian Stanley. Ian Stanley is the keyboardist and another kind of the guys in the band.
Yeah.
And it took weeks for Ian Stanley to convince Roland Orzabal that it was any good. When he first heard it, he said, that's a worldwide smash.
Yeah.
And Roland's like, I don't know, man. It's just like a chorus. Like, I want people to kind of chant it during a concert. He's like, dude, that chorus is a worldwide smash. Took weeks to convince him. It was the second to last song added to the album. And because this song is complex, it pushed them over time and over budget. But gave us the gift of one more song that we'll talk about here in just a minute.
Yeah, the studio didn't like how long the song was, right?
Should we talk about that now or in two songs?
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it now. Okay,
and then we'll tee it up that it's going to come up a little bit later. We'll just tell them what happened now, and then we'll tell them about the lyric in the next song. Right?
Sounds good. Sounds good. So this song, the average length of the songs on these albums is over 5 minutes. Average length.
They're long.
They're long songs, including Shout.
Yeah.
So David Bates is a record guy, and he wants them to reduce this song, Shout, by 30 seconds. He wants them to fade out.
That's a huge reduction in a song.
30 seconds. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Yes. And they're like, we don't want to. No. Right. You guys are doing it.
They do.
They do.
And they're not happy about
they're
it.
They're sad about it.
And they're going to protest it a little bit later.
They're so sad that they had to fade it. All right. So we talked about how this song reached number one in August of 85. Okay. Here's your top five. August 3rd, 1985.
Oh, we're already here. I'm so happy.
Hey, number one is Shout. Number two is Every Time You Go Away by Paul Young.
Okay, that's a decent song.
It's a good song, right? Yeah. Number three, If You Love Somebody, Set Them Free by Sting.
I like that song. You're making a face. I like that song.
Okay.
Free, Set Them Free. Yeah, I dig that song, yeah.
Okay, all right. Number four, You Give Good Love by Whitney Houston.
Meh.
Meh.
Yeah.
And number five, Glory Days by Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, I love that one.
It's a good one, right?
It's one of my favorites, yeah.
Yeah. So this video was directed by Nigel Dick.
Oh, I'm so glad that you were talking about Nigel Dick.
Okay, I was wondering if you would remember who that was.
Yeah, we totally talked about him when we talked about, get ready for this, ladies and gentlemen, Guns N' Roses.
I know. He's like either Tears for Fears or Guns N' Roses, right?
It's crazy. I mean, he's one of those guys that has directed a ton of videos.
He has.
But the most iconic Guns N' Roses videos are his. So he's got Patience. He's got Paradise City. He's got Sweet Child of Mine. I mean, he's
Welcome to the Jungle.
He's the man. Yeah.
He also did Rocket by Def Leppard, Down in a Hole by Alice in Chains.
Yep. Yep.
He did Wonderwall and Champagne Supernova by Oasis, mm-hmm. and Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Yeah. He had a few Britney Spears in his list too. Yes.
He did.
Nigel Dick.
Yep.
What a name.
Terribly unfortunate name. I did see an interview with Kurt Smith, how he's got kind of a little braided tail in the video.
That his hairstyle choice in the 80s was unfortunate on several different occasions.
So apparently his children think it's hilarious that he had a braid in this video.
A rat tail braid.
Yeah. Like, Dad, look at your braid. Oh, my gosh.
Speaking of his children, he's got a couple little girls, one of whom has an incredible voice, an incredible musical ability. And we've been watching this. It was like an Instagram kind of, we're just going to make this song real quick from COVID. Like they were stuck inside the house and she's in her early 20s. I mean, she looks like she's 15.
She does.
She's a super sweet looking little girl.
Yep.
And they're both, she's playing guitar, he's playing bass, and they start singing Mad World.
It's so great.
All around me are familiar faces. places, worn out places, worn out faces, threatened early for their daily races, going nowhere, going nowhere. And their tears are filling up their glasses. No expression, no expression. Have my head, I want to drown my sorrow.
How cool is that, man? That's just so sweet.
It is incredibly sweet. And her voice, I mean, her harmony with her dad is a beautiful blend. It is great.
While that's true, I could sing with Kurt Smith and it would sing halfway awesome. So...
Well, she does better than you.
That's true. That's true. I do like how in some of the lyrics of the song, you still have some of the remnants of nuclear tension, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the line, I hope we live to tell the tale. Nuclear tension between the world and the USSR and that type of thing.
It was 1985, right in the middle of Reagan and Gorbachev. I mean, it was Cold War tension peak.
No doubt. Yep. One of the biggest songs of the summer of 1985.
The song is amazing. It never gets old to me. And I think for guys our age, it defines the album.
Okay. We ready to move on to the next one?
Let's move on to song number two.
Song number two. That song is called The Working Hour.
So talk about songs with different personalities.
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds like Jan Hammer. This song could be playing while Crockett is angry driving in the Ferrari after he accidentally shot the drug dealer.
Yeah, for sure. So you got that long, really long intro.
Sweet sax.
Sexy sax.
Yeah.
And then you got that kind of shuffle beat, and then the song really takes off. I love it. It's a great song.
This one's really good. This was not on my radar before we came back and revisited this album. This is not one that I was listening to back in the 80s, but it definitely has a distinct sound. I wouldn't have... You play until Roland Orzabal starts singing, and I don't know who this is initially.
Right, right? Sure.
It does not sound like my Tears for Fears.
When you play that sexy sax intro and you compare it to the beginning of Shout, sounds like two different bands.
So speaking of two different bands, let's talk about the different bands that became Tears for Fears. How about that, right?
Sounds good.
Okay, so the key members of Tears for Fears, the guys who are on the album cover, are Roland Orzabal and Kurt Smith.
Right.
Okay? They actually played in a band when they were 14 years old, a little youth band
right.
called Ducks, like Duck with a Z at the end. Ducks.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what they did, but they split up, I guess, eventually or moved on to other projects. And then Roland Orzabal joins up with this guy and forms a duo, and they call themselves the Baker Brothers. The other guy is John Baker, so that makes sense, except that they weren't brothers, so right. That's a little weird.
We're of no relation.
But they would play in pubs. They're like 16 years old. They would play in pubs. This is around 1977. And they always opened with the song Mrs. Robinson by Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so ultimately, they changed their name to Graduate.
Yes.
And by this time, they've brought Kurt Smith back on bass. They release an album called Acting My Age, and they have a video and a relatively decent hit called Elvis Should Play Ska.
That hits number one in Spain.
Tell me you're the pop commander. Elvis should play ska. Elvis should play ska.
Yeah, I heard the song a couple of different times, and then I learned that they're not talking about Elvis Presley.
What?
They're talking about Elvis Costello.
Oh, you are kidding me.
Oh, yeah, they're talking about Elvis Costello, and I don't disagree. I would disagree on Elvis Presley should have played ska. That would not make sense. Elvis Costello, absolutely, I'm on board. Have him play ska. That would be great.
Okay, so I got a question for you.
Yeah.
How do they get the name Tears for Fears?
Okay, before we get there, Graduate goes on this grueling tour of Europe. I mean, they're up in the UK, but they're touring down in Spain and other places in Europe. They don't even have roadies. Like, they're carrying their own equipment. They're
nice.
Setting up their own equipment. Yeah, nice for the other guys in the band, but Roland and Kurt are like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And they decide, we'd really like to just do studio work. Like, we would prefer to work in the studio. We hate being on the road. We hate having to do all this crap. And so they're out. They move on and they decide to form their own band. And initially, they call the band A History of Headaches.
What?
They initially call the band A History of Headaches, but then they come across another one of Arthur Janoff's books and they come up with a different name. You know the name of the book?
The book's name is Prisoner of Pain.
Yeah. And so what a part of this book is about children having nightmares. They come in, they're crying about their nightmares. And what Arthur Janoff says is many parents are like, don't cry. It's okay. Don't worry about that. And what he says is what you should be saying is go ahead, cry it out. Let them have their tears for fears.
Love it.
Now, real quick, before I jump back into that, there was a brief period before Tears for Fears that they were studio musicians. Do you know this?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they were studio musicians and they played in a band called Neon.
Okay.
Now, Neon didn't really do anything, but the guys they played with were a guy named Pete Byrne and Rob Fisher. Well, when they split up, Byrne and Rob Fisher form a band called Naked Eyes.
What?
Do you know this band?
Always something there to remind me.
You got it, brother. Always something there to remind me and Promises, Promises.
What?
Yep. Kurt and Roland played with the guys from Naked Eyes before they formed Tears for Fears. And then those guys went on to record those two songs.
Wow. That is a fantastic nugget. Great dig right there.
Yeah. And while they were in Neon, they played with a guitarist named Neil Taylor, who is the guitarist on Songs from the Big Chair.
Oh, sweet.
Yep.
Okay.
So anyway, we've gone far astray from the working hour. As we've said, this is a completely different personality. You've got jazz, you've got sax.
Sure.
You got all kinds of complexity that's not in their other songs, and that's really, truly amazing stuff. Did you have experience with this song when you were a kid?
I listened to side one of this album on repeat.
Okay.
It was that time of my life where I was still kind of playing with Transformers. I had 1 foot in toys and 1 foot in MTV.
Okay.
So it got me through that little period of time.
I don't really know what this song is about.
Well, I tell you what we do know. We know that these songs came out during the decadent 80s and that Roland Orzabal is just kind of an old school hippie.
Yeah.
He's kind of a cleaned up hippie.
He really is. We'll talk about his growing up here in a song or two, and it's unique.
It is. It's different.
It's fascinating.
Yep.
Okay, that does it for the working hour.
Let's get to it.
We've got to get to this next song.
Maybe a Mount Rushmore song of the 80s.
100%.
This song's called Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
So this intro goes on for 30 solid seconds before he comes in with the vocal.
30 solid seconds of amazingness.
I know, but what song plays 30 seconds of music before the voice starts today in 2024?
Nobody anymore.
Nobody does it, right?
Plus, you get that really cool arpeggio, which I've learned since doing this podcast. You get it right at the top of the song.
Yeah.
They play it one more time. But if you played that arpeggio for me, I'd be like, that's Tears for Fears.
And it's a simple but beautiful mixture of sounds, of different instruments and techniques that encapsulates what was beautiful about 80s music.
It's so good.
So the verse of the song is two chords, but it's almost not even really two chords. It's almost one chord. It is D, one with an A bass and one with a G bass. That's it. It's da, da. It's basically the same chord with a different bass note for it. And amazing. They built this song. And what is crazy is they didn't want to do this song.
Now, Not only did they not want to do it, the producer made them finish it. And when they finished it, they still didn't like it. They had three songs laying around. And they're like, which one are we going to pick out of these three? And the producer's like, you're taking this one. And they're like, I don't know. And so it barely made the cut.
Yeah.
So we talked about how Def Leppard created Pour Some Sugar on Me. Joe Elliott was just playing with a guitar.
Yeah.
Mutt Lang was walking by and said, what the heck are you working on? And he said, it's just something I'm working, you know, just fiddling around with. And he's like, no, that's a song. Same thing happened on this song. Roland Orzabal was messing around and played two chords that dun, dun.
Okay. So the producer that you're talking about is Christopher Hughes.
Chris Hughes, that's right.
But his middle name was Merrick. Everybody called him Merrick.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he was the drummer for Adam and the Ants.
What?
Yes. Like he and Adam Ant were in a band together before he produced some of their albums, and then he started focusing on producing instead of being a drummer. He was the producer on The Hurting, which is the album. I mean, this is, we didn't mention that. This is Tears for Fears.
Second album. Yep.
And the first album was The Hurting, which is where you get Mad World and Change and some of these other just incredible songs. I didn't even realize, like, this is how out of touch with Tears for Fears I was. I didn't realize that Mad World was a Tears for Fears song. I know it from, like, the Grey's Anatomy, the new version that's out, right? New. The 20-year-old version
that's out, not
the 40-year-old version, right?
Right.
But Merrick Hughes, Christopher Hughes, he co-wrote Everybody Wants to Rule the World. That's why he's pushing it. That and the fact that it is an amazing song. Right? As you mentioned, I think before with some other guys, he had worked with Def Leppard.
Really?
Yep. He worked with Def Leppard. He worked with Robert Plant, Paul McCartney, Rick Ocasek, Peter Gabriel, John Bon Jovi.
What?
Yes. He was a huge producer, and he is the guy who was playing drums on Shout. Now, Manny Elias played drums on all of the rest of the songs, but the drums on Shout are Christopher Merrick Hughes, the producer in the song, who convinced them and helped them co-write Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Okay. So let's get into it a little bit, because he walks by, hears the two chords. He's like, guys, turn that into a song. That's fantastic. And they're like, what are you talking about? We're finishing up the album. We're working on Shout. It's the last song.
Yeah.
We're done. He's like, no, you're turning that into a song. Takes him 2 weeks to finish it out. But Roland didn't like it. He didn't feel like it fit the album. Felt like it was too light. And let's be honest. It's not light, but it's very radio friendly. I mean, you can hear that right off the bat. So this song was influenced by the song Waterfront by Simple Minds.
The drums were flat out stolen. They were stolen from this song.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, no, it's for real. Like, they didn't sample it. They didn't go that far, but they programmed their drums with just a minor tweak. Let's listen to it.
Let's listen to
Waterfront and see what you think.
Okay. Yeah, it's that kind of shuffle, right?
Yeah, boom, cha cha, boom, cha cha. But I mean, I heard Kurt Smith talk about it. He didn't try to deny it. He was like, "We love that drum beat. It catches you. It entrances you." And we flat out programmed the drums so that it would sound like that.
Well, they didn't just steal from that song. They stole from another song too.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so they're working on the chorus and they're writing it. And Roland's like, "Okay, I knew that I had it worked out to where it was everybody da 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 da, right?
Right."
And
right.
So he knew it was everybody something.
Uh huh.
And for a while, it was everybody wants to go to war.
Yeah, another Cold War deal, right?
Right. And so he's like, it just didn't work. Let me play the first part of a song from The Clash called Charlie Don't Surf. Charlie don't surf. Stole it right from that song.
Well, yeah, I heard the story on this. So did you hear the rest of the story?
I did. I love it.
Yeah.
So tell me.
This is well after Everybody Wants to Rule the World has come out.
It's like the number one world smash, right?
Right. And Joe Strummer and Kurt Smith end up in the same pub together. And Joe Strummer like sees him across the room and Kurt Smith sees him and he sees him like walking towards him. And he's like, you owe me a drink. And Kurt Smith is like, okay, yeah, I could do that.
See, I heard that it was, you owe me a fiver for stealing the lyrics to my song. And he reached into his pocket, pulled out a five and handed it to him. But still, great story, right?
Yeah, right.
Now, you mentioned Kurt Smith. Kurt Smith is actually the one lead singing this song.
Yeah, even though he didn't write it.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though I can tell the difference, they both have kind of these full throaty vocals, you know?
These guys were made to be in a band together. Their voices are so well matched that they're almost, you almost can't tell who's singing from song to song. But they definitely do trade off quite a bit. Now, Roland Orzabal had written most of their stuff, and he does sing a large part of what they have. But Kurt Smith has definitely contributed. And I mean, Kurt Smith wrote Mad World, which is one of their best songs ever. So,
right, right.
I mean, it's, and in several others. But it's funny, I saw a meme, because there's all kinds of pictures of these two guys, and they're always staring off into some other direction. And somebody was like, Tears for Fears always looks like a couple who just had a fight.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I love it. And like, you know, we talked about how they didn't really like the song. They didn't think it fit. Mm-hmm. And I love this line. So the producer, you know, Chris Hughes, made them work on this, right? He made them work on it. And so they started to play it again and again and again. And Roland said, it didn't really take until we had to quote unquote wear it. And that's when they were like, okay, this song's pretty good. It still almost didn't make the album. That summer, when it hit number one, they got a call from their manager. It said, congratulations, you guys are number one in America. You know what Kurt said? Wow, that was quite easy.
Yeah. Now, I was blathering on earlier about the fact that songs from the 80s had long introductions and killer guitar solos. And if I say to you, great guitarists from the 80s or great guitar solos from the 80s, you probably don't immediately go to Roland Orzabal or Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Right.
But number one, Roland Orzabal is a sick guitar player. Is really a talented
He's
guy.
He's good, no
he
doubt.
He's really good. And if you listen to the guitar solo on this, tasty. It is some fine bluesy, jazzy, kick-ass guitar playing.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, before the guitar solo comes in, though, there's a lyric.
We got to talk about the lyrics, right?
What we were just talking about a minute ago. Yeah.
Right. So let's talk about the lyric. So glad we almost made it. So sad they had to fade it.
I didn't know what that meant. I just thought that was just some kind of poetic thing, you know,
sure,
that they
sure.
put in a song.
Right.
No, they're referencing something very specific.
That's a direct reference to when that record label guy made them fade out Shout too early.
30 seconds early. So sad we had to fade it.
Oh.
Because turns out the record producer rules the world.
Listen, this song hits number one June 8th of 1985. It hits number one on the Hot 100, number one on the dance chart, number two on the rock chart, and number one on the adult contemporary. That is widespread appeal. Okay. I've got to give you this top five from June 8th of 85.
Hey, two top fives in one episode.
I got to hit these because
I love it.
It's loaded with Shirley songs.
No apologies necessary. Let me hear it.
Okay. So number one, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Right.
Number two, Everything She Wants by Wham.
That's straight off of Make It Big.
We're going to talk about that next week.
Yep.
Number three, Axel F.
Oh, which we just talked about. Just talked about in our Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack.
Number four is Suddenly by Billy Ocean.
I could skip that one. And I bet you love it.
I like Billy Ocean.
I know.
And number five is Heaven by Bryan Adams.
Oh, that's a good one. I love Bryan Adams. We're going to cover Bryan Adams a little bit later on this summer.
Just a few weeks away?
Yeah.
Okay. Now then, have you seen the movie Real Genius?
Yes, I have. I love that movie. I love that movie. I think Top Secret was the movie that I got introduced to Val Kilmer.
Sure.
But Real Genius... Yeah, Real Genius was a piece of gold for me. Saw it in the theater.
That movie came out the summer of 85 and had enough foresight to grab Everybody Wants to Rule the World for the final laser popcorn scene.
For those of you who don't remember it and can't pull up Real Genius on your streaming service,
right?
There is a laser that is shot from space to the evil professor's house.
Jerry Hathaway.
Jerry Hathaway, same guy who plays Dickless on the Ghostbusters, who plays the news reporter on Die Hard. He's the evil professor on Real Genius.
Yeah.
And they shoot a laser, unbeknownst to him, into his house that is filled with Instant Pop popcorn. And suddenly his brand new home is overflowing with popcorn while Tears for Fears is blasting in your ears.
It's so great. We got to cover Real Genius maybe next summer.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Love it.
Okay, I want to say one more thing before we leave. Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that if you were making a top 10 songs of the 1980s, if you said this song is in that top 10, I'd have no problem with that.
No.
It's a fantastic song and one of the greatest songs of the 80s.
100%.
It is not my favorite Tears for Fears song. It's not my favorite 80s Tears for Fears song.
Are we going to talk about your favorite Tears for Fears 80s song? Well, let me ask you,
what is your favorite Tears for Fears 80s song?
It's Shout.
Shout's your number one?
It's been Shout since 1985.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine is Sowing the Seeds of Love.
Oh, wow. Okay. 89?
89. It's an absolute banger.
To me, I heard that and I was like, oh, they decided to do the Beatles.
They're doing the Beatles, there's no doubt.
They're
doing
the Beatles, and they did it great. They did a great job of the Beatles.
They can wear those shoes. Yeah.
Yeah, they can.
Okay, are we done with this one?
Yep. Time to move on to song number four.
The song's called Mother's Talk.
So talk again about songs with completely different personalities. The first 20 seconds of this song could be a theme from a James Bond episode, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then 20 seconds in, they completely change gears, and it's like a dead or alive dance hit. I mean, it's... I'm like, dun. It's gold. I love this song.
So the beginning strings that you mentioned that sound James Bond theme-ish.
Yeah.
They sampled that from Barry Manilow.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Love it.
And then it kind of jumps into this sort of dance rock thing.
Yeah.
I know our good friend Melissa Mingle, this is her favorite Tears for Fears song.
Nice.
This was the first single released in the UK, but the fourth single released in the US. Reached number 27 on the US charts.
Yep. This, again, this was one of those songs that flew under my radar. I was not, I was hearing the three big hits off of this album, and that was it.
I've got a story I want to tell you about Roland Orzabal's mom.
I am at your feet. Go ahead.
All right, so Mother's Talk, obviously, we're talking about his mother here, okay?
Right.
So there's a song off the album Seeds of Love called Woman in Chains.
Okay.
Okay? And it was written about his mother, just like this song was.
Okay.
Okay? His mom was a stripper. At one point, okay?
She wasn't just a dancer, she was a stripper.
She was a dancer, stripper, entertainer of men.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know where the line was on how much entertainment she provided, but okay. It's not your average mother job.
I saw him talk about the fact that he had a very unusual childhood.
Yeah.
Like he talked about how his friends had parents that worked 9 to 5. His dad had basically a nervous breakdown when he was very young and became semi bedridden, then decided to form this entertainment company,
right,
with his mom as a dancer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Apparently there were times when dad felt okay because his mom would go out and strip and his father would send his personal driver to go spy on her. And if she was talking too interestingly to other men, he would beat her up.
The driver or the dad?
The dad.
Oh my. Stripping was okay. The talking,
right,
not okay.
That's right.
Mother's talk.
Yeah, it's really a strange.
Oh my childhood. Gosh.
Now you sent me a reel where he's talking about how there were people coming in out of their houses for this entertainment industry. There were conjurers and cat jugglers.
Yeah, he said cat jugglers.
He did say it.
He said conjurers and cat jugglers, and I went, wait, what did he say? Did he really say cat juggler? Because I told you, I was like, I thought cat juggling was like a completely made-up thing by Steve Martin from The Jerk.
That's it.
I've seen this before. Cat jugglers.
This is disgusting.
Were cat jugglers real?
I guess. I don't really live in that world of cat juggling.
Well, if they were real, and Rill and Oilers of All was not just making up a story, part of the story was that there were also musicians who would come in, and that is where he learned to pick up music, pick up the guitar, and start playing.
Okay, I've got a story for you. I don't know where it fits, but it's too interesting not to tell, so I'm just going to drop it right here. Okay? So after Tears for Fears had been touring in support of this album for over a year, they're touring the world, they're all over the place, they're on each other's nerves, and they finally have a break. So they had 5 days off where they planned to go vacation in Hawaii. Well, that just so happened to be the same time that Bob Geldof had planned Live Aid. Well, he announces that Tears for Fears is going to play Live Aid without asking them.
Okay.
He thought that he could just pressure them into showing up by announcing it. Well, that pissed him off. So they said, screw you, buddy. We're going to Hawaii. And they went. Ah. And that's why they weren't at Live Aid.
Oh, wow.
Now, just as a tip of the hat to our next episode.
Yep.
This song, middle of the song, are the lyrics, Wake Me Up.
Nice. Hit stop on your tape player. Kick it out. Flip it over for side two. And we start off with the song called I Believe.
Okay, so we start off with this reverse drum beat, right? This is obviously a drum played in reverse. And then you come in with Roland Orzabal singing this like jazz of a nightclub, smooth, slow, sweet, jazzy. George Michael feels...
It's like Kissing a Fool.
Right, but of course Kissing a Fool didn't come along until later.
88?
Yeah.
That's right. But it is that sort of crooner, you know, tip your waitresses, jazzy nightclub, yeah, smoky feel.
This is what I know. This song was influenced by the songwriting of Robert Wyatt. Can you tell me about this?
Here's what I know about Robert Wyatt. Okay. So Robert Wyatt was a drummer and singer for two bands, one called Caravan and one called Soft Machine. Soft Machine had a song called Dedicated to You, But You Weren't Listening. In the liner notes in this album, it says, this song in particular is dedicated to Robert Wyatt if he's listening.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a direct reference to that song.
Right.
Here's the deal. Robert Wyatt was a good guy, kind of a non-drinker before, and then he got swept up in that lifestyle and became like an instant alcoholic. Like, couldn't handle it, became a heavy drinker, and was out of control instantly. Well, while at a party, and clearly heavily inebriated, fell out of a fourth-story window, broke his spine, didn't die, but was paralyzed from the waist down, and he credits that accident as saving his life. He said that if he had not fallen out of that window, he would have continued down a path and died from his drinking, but that caused him to change his life and therefore live.
Wow.
Okay, I have to talk to you about the music video.
Oh, there's a... seen the video.
Okay, so this was released as a single in the UK. They actually made a music video for it. So you haven't seen it right now.
No.
So let me describe it for you. Then I want you to watch it, then you'll react to it, okay?
Okay.
So in the music video, he's shirtless, and it's like he's in, you know, button-fly jeans, but he's actually kind of uncomfortably muscular. When I watch this musical, it makes me feel like back to the junior high days where you're sitting in the back seat with somebody riding through the movies, and then you look over, your two friends are making out. And you're trapped back there, you know, like uncomfortably coming into a situation. Roland Orzabal singing shirtless, I'm like, I feel like weird watching this video. But here's the deal. So he's singing without a shirt on. And then out of nowhere, Kurt Smith drops in out of the blue just to tap the triangle, just ting, and then disappears again. You have got to watch this video.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Dee, now you've seen the video.
Oh, my word.
What do you think?
He was uncomfortably muscular. It's not Chris Hemsworth, but, I mean, when you see Roland Orzabal and all of the other Tears for Fears video, you think a dainty man.
Right.
Just to be frank, you don't think of a guy who's in shape, and he's in decent shape.
Sure.
Now, the jeans, the button-fly jeans... Top Button wasn't Button.
Okay.
Number one. Yeah. Top Button wasn't. But that's okay because they were definitive mom jeans. I mean, they went all the way up to well above his belly button. I mean, nearly to the sternum.
It was 1985.
And then, yes, he didn't like just walk in and walk out. It was like he faded in and faded out. Kurt Smith with the little
ting of the triangle. Just like appear out of nowhere. Bing.
And then you get, when you get the sax solo, you get him saying,
William.
William. So, you know who that is?
No.
Okay, so that's William Gregory. Played, I mean, his biggest probably claim to fame was playing saxophone for Tears for Fears.
Okay.
But later on, he was a part of a duo called Goldfrapp. But before that, and after Tears for Fears, he played with Peter Gabriel.
Okay.
He played with The Cure. He played with Portishead, which is one of my favorites. I think James Buckley is a big fan of Portishead as well.
Okay.
And then he played oboe for Tori Amos.
Well, how about that?
There you go. There's William in his glasses. He's the nerdiest saxophone player in the world.
He looked like Wormser from Revenge of the Nerds, like a little kid.
He did. He really did.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next one.
Okay.
That next song is called Broken. Okay, so this song goes well over halfway through the song before there's any singing.
Yeah, this song's about 2.5 minutes long, and it's 1:40 before you hear any song.
I thought it was an instrumental when I first listened to it.
Me too, 100%. I thought it was a jam session. I mean, this is, when you go and see a concert, I love these moments where the band just jams out, and they're just playing and having fun and doing some crazy stuff. And that's totally what's happening in this song to me. Then all of a sudden you're like, oh, whoa, there are lyrics to this song.
Well, not only that, but the first time I'm listening to it, I'm like, oh, they're jamming out. They're having a good time. They're playing music. Hey, that's Head Over Heels. Oh, wait, now we're back to a jam session.
55 seconds in, you get da na 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 na, and then it's over, and it's like, what?
It's,
I know,
like
that.
A jab to the gut. I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
So this song was written by Ian Stanley. This was his baby on the album.
Uh-huh.
They loved that little piano piece at 55 seconds. And so they later go on to build that into the song Head Over Heels, which we'll talk about here in just a moment.
So Ian Stanley, because we haven't mentioned his name before, he's the guy playing keyboards. I mean, this for the band, for Songs from the Big Chair, you obviously have, you've got Roland and you've got Kurt. You've got Manny Elias, who played the drums on songs 2 through 7, who was their, I mean, they had been their drummer from Neon. And then you have Ian Stanley playing keyboards, doing the Lindrum programming. And he also did the arrangements for Listen, which we'll talk about here in just a minute.
I've got a great Ian Stanley story for you. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. So in June of 1985, This is the peak of Tears for Fears power.
Yeah.
They're touring the world, whatever, and they end up in Kansas City for a 2-night stopover. So they end up, for whatever reason, Ian Stanley goes to the Peppercorn Duck Club at the Hyatt Hotel in Kansas City. Okay.
The
Peppercorn
Duck Club.
Now think with me. Yeah. In June of 1985, Tears for Fears is huge, and he goes to listen to a local singer at a bar in a hotel.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
You with me?
Hyatt.
At the Hyatt.
Yeah.
Her name is Olita Adams.
Okay.
He listens to her perform, and he is blown away. So the next night, he invites the rest of the guys in the band to come, like Kurt Smith and Roland Oshbold, to come join him and listen to this lady sing. So they come down and they listen, and they're blown away. So they go up to her afterwards, and they're like, hey, guess what? We're Tears for Fears. We're worldwide known. We've got a number one hit in the world right now. We would love for you to sing on our next album.
I know who this is. Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, she's big on that album.
So she says, of course, I would love to. She doesn't really believe that Tears for Fears is going to remember her, let alone call her in 2 or 3 years whenever they do this. So guess what? 2 years later, when they start working on their follow-up album, they call her. And she's like, yes, of course. So she sings in a duet with them on the song Woman in Chains, which we talked about when we talked about Mother's Talk. Yep. She also agreed to open for them on the Seeds of Love tour, and she stays on stage and sings back up the entire time.
Yeah, she's, I remember the video. She's a huge part of the video from that Oh, man.
They discovered her in Kansas City at a bar at the Hyatt.
Crazy.
How about that?
That's a great story, man. Fantastic. That's worth the price of admission right there.
I love stories like that, right?
Absolutely. That's fantastic.
Okay. We ready to move on to another big hitter?
Absolutely. Three songs I know from the era. This is song number three, song number seven on the album, which is a Slash song. And this is a Head Over Heels / Broken. Wait, before we start the song, I want everybody just to think about this as this intro plays. Beautiful piano, then you get this ethereal synthesizer coming in behind it. Then suddenly the guitar takes over for the synthesizer. Then the drums pound in, and then it crescendos at 30 seconds, and Roland Orzabal starts singing. What a incredible build that was.
I love this song, man.
Oh, it's so good.
I love it. How in the world did this song not hit number one? It only went to number three.
We have a third top five for this episode.
Would you like to hear?
I would love to hear it.
Because we've talked about it already. We've talked about this very top five, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So
when did we talk about it?
On our Miami Vice soundtrack episode.
Okay, couple episodes ago, right? Gotcha.
Yeah, so this song tops out at number three, November 9th of 85.
Okay.
How it does not hit number one is a crime against humanity, okay? So number five this week is We Built This City by Starship.
Okay.
Number four is You Belong to the City by Glenn Frey off the Miami Vice soundtrack.
Yep.
Number three is Head Over Heels. Number two is Part-Time Lover by Stevie Wonder.
That's got to hit you deep heart in your soul.
It does. It makes me hurt. And then number one is undeniable. It's the Miami Vice theme, but Head Over Heels
beats it every day, all day, and twice on
Sunday.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah. This song is amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Can I just read to you the poetry of these lyrics?
Sure, read it to me.
I wanted to be with you alone and talk about the weather, but traditions I can trace against the child in your face won't escape my attention. You keep your distance via the system of touch and gentle persuasion, and I'm lost in admiration. Could I need you this much? Oh, you're just wasting my time. Just wasting my time.
That's great. I love it.
Wow.
Okay, now we're sitting in awe of this song.
Yes.
But both Kurt and Roland didn't particularly like this song very much. What? Come on, guys. Orzabal called it one of the simplest tracks Tears for Fears ever produced. It's a simple love song. He didn't really like it that much.
He's so wrong.
He's way out of bounds on this one.
Yeah, this is gold.
This is the only track with Kurt as a co-writer.
Oh, yeah.
And the mix of their two voices. They harmonize in this. It's just beautiful. I love it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the music video for a second?
Yeah, let's do that.
It's a ridiculous 80s music video that we saw every 5 minutes on MTV. He's walking around a library. He's got a stack of books. And he's talking to the librarian who is disinterested in him. Another video by Nigel Dick. Here's the funny part about this. So in the music video, we have card catalog trouble, right? It's a very 80s thing.
Are you telling me Roland Orzabal does not know the Dewey Decimal System?
He has trouble. And if I was a betting man, I bet they got that part of the music video from Ghostbusters.
Well, 84, 85, yeah.
The cards in the card catalog are flying off the shelf, right? Okay. So he goes up to talk to the librarian. Her name is Joan Densmore. Now, here's the thing. She was a model.
Okay.
Nigel Dick, when he hired her, there was two girls. One was nice, one was mean and nasty. And he hired the mean and nasty girl because he wanted her to be indifferent to Roland's advances in the video.
Okay.
So when you watch the video, you're like, she's not very nice. That was intentional.
And obviously true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's not too much to say about this one other than it's just a fantastic song.
It is a baller song. Beautiful music, beautiful arrangement. The dynamics are incredible, and the lyrics are poetry. And like I said, it lasts to today. It lasts to where my 14-year-old football-playing son says this is his favorite Tears for Fears song.
I can't fault him at all.
No.
And they built this off of one little thing from the song Broken, which had been around since 1982.
Yeah.
They took that little piano piece and built it into a number three hit.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie Donnie Darko?
No, I haven't.
I haven't seen it either, but at the beginning, there's this big intro where there's no dialogue, and for like 4 minutes, you get nothing but the Tears for Fears song, Head Over Heels.
Oh.
And I watched this piece of the movie. So they're walking through the hall, they're, you know, high school students intermingling, and it kind of sets the tone for the movie. Here's the interesting part. When the movie was being made, they did not have permission to use the song yet. So they went all in on the song in the hopes that they could get the rights to it. So they had this big opening scene all set to this song. The Tears for Fears guys weren't going to allow them to use it, but it took a personal phone call from Drew Barrymore to Kurt Smith that sealed the deal.
Nice.
How about that?
That's awesome. That's interesting. When did Donnie Darko come out?
2001 or two, something like
okay.
that.
Wow. That's awesome. You know, speaking of time passing, time flies, right? So there is a mini concert, a basement concert where the Tears for Fears guys are all together recording together in this smaller space. And they do, I mean, they've got songs from The Hurting. They've got songs from The Big Chair. They've got songs from Sowing the Seeds of Love. Nice little concert. And this is last year. They're in their 60s. They may have gotten better. Like, I mean, it is so freaking good. I was telling you, I was like, it's kind of weird because Roland Orzabal, he's now completely gray, almost white haired.
Yeah.
He looks like Gandalf.
He does.
He
no
looks
doubt.
Like Gandalf, but it's like he wears it better. He looks better now at 60 than he did when he was in his 20s in the 80s.
You know?
I mean, he looks like just a kick-ass biker, rocker stud.
So I saw this picture on the internet, and it's a picture of the two guys from the Songs from the Big Chair cover.
Right. Kurt and Roland. Yes.
Kurt and Roland. And then I saw a picture of them basically in the same positions, except now. Clearly, they're much older. You know, Roland's got a white beard and white hair. Kurt's barely got any hair. And the caption was, funny how time flies.
There you go. It all comes back. All right. Sad to say it, but we are to the last song in the album. So I need everybody, I need you to listen. Okay, so clearly this song spills over from the live version of Broken that we just listened to from song number 7 on the album, right?
Yes,
and I have a prediction. I have a prediction, everybody. Jason and I have not talked about this song before, but my prediction is that Jason actually really loves this song.
Really?
Yes. You know why it's my prediction?
Why?
Because it has got Phil Collins and Genesis all over it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
We know each other's taste pretty well now.
We do. And this song, I enjoy this song. I got to say, I would not have put it as the tentpole end of the album.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit at the end.
No. This is a great song for a middle, an intermission, let's just kind of live and soak in this moment for a little bit. But if you had said to me, do we put the song Listen last or do we put the song Head Over Heels last? I'd be like, Head Over Heels. 100%.
Right.
Don't fail this.
You want to spike the football on your way out.
Yeah. But as you mentioned, they didn't even really like Head Over Heels. So.
Yeah.
I mentioned just a bit ago that Ian Stanley, the guy that did their keyboards, he was the one that arranged this song. And this song is complex, right? There's no question. There's a lot of jamming going on here. But if we're saying this is an organized machine, Ian Stanley's the one that kind of put this together. How did Ian Stanley get in the band?
No idea.
He offered the guys his recording facility to record it.
That's the way to do it, man.
Yeah.
That's how David Roth got into Van Halen, basically. Right?
Basically. He's like, I got a place. You guys can go record over there. It's fine. And then, of course, just within a very short amount of time, he had joined the band. Now, speaking of angry married couple.
Yes.
Roland and Kurt had an acrimonious split.
They did.
In the mid to late 90s, right?
They did.
And
91.
Early. 91. Early. I'm sorry. That's right. You're right. 91. That's right. So 6 years after this album, they're like, F you. I'm not recording with you anymore. They did not like each other. Okay.
So they went 10 years without speaking.
That's incredible, given how gifted they are, how well that they did work together. But yeah, there must have been something very bad that happened.
Roland talked about it. He goes, you know, when I read about our breakup, he goes, I was there, so I know what happened. But everybody makes it sound like we were having fist fights and throwing stuff at each other, because it wasn't like that at all.
Huh.
He was like, what happened was I would be like, I'm right, and this is the way we need to do it. And Kurt would be like, no, I'm right, and this is the way we need to do it. And then they would go stand in opposite corners of the room. There's no yelling. There's no screaming. There's no throwing stuff. There's no F you. There's no nothing. It was just
stare into a different area.
Exactly, yeah.
Somebody would take a picture and it would be the next album cover.
Just exactly.
But it caused a 10-year rift.
10-year rift. And when they got back together and made the next album, you know what the album's called? Everybody Loves a Happy Ending.
Ah.
I thought that was perfect.
It is perfect. And like I said, the stuff that they did just a year ago, they're playing together beautifully right now. Beautifully.
I saw Roland also talk about how they complement each other so well that they really can't stay apart.
Yeah.
They are intertwined, and that's how it is.
One little tidbit on that intermission period, all right?
Okay.
So Ian Stanley, guy that arranged Listen that we're talking about right now, he collaborated with Roland Orzabal on a side project called, ready for this?
Yeah.
Man Crab.
Man Crab?
Man Crab.
Oh, okay.
Not Man Crab. They released a single called Fish for Life, which is on the Karate Kid 2 soundtrack.
Get out of here with that. Yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah, Fish for Life.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Well, I do have one sort of sad story.
Okay.
So Roland Orzabal was involved with a lady named Caroline Johnston for many years. They were dating since they were teens, got married, had two sons together. She slowly developed an alcohol problem, and she died in 2017 due to alcohol-related dementia and cirrhosis.
Oh, no.
And when she passed away, he looked up, and who is there to walk him through that?
Kurt Smith.
Kurt Smith. That's what friends, true friends, are for.
Love it. Love it. Well, here we are. We're at the end of the album, and I loved every minute of it. Fantastic album. Like I said at the beginning, this is that girl that I didn't really pay attention to in high school, and we come back for the reunion, and I'm falling in love.
It's fantastic.
Guys, be sure and hit that follow button, hit that subscribe button, whatever you need to do so that you can catch our next episode where we are going to compare songs from The Big Chair to Make It Big by Wham.
Two of the biggest albums of the summer of 1985.
So be sure and join us for that. If you would do us the honor, if you've listened this far, give us a 5-star rating, put a review out there. Tell us.
We love reviews.
We love them. They help us out so much, and they let other people know us about us. And if you are even more deeply in love with us than that, check out our Patreon page where we have a new episode every single month where we deep dive into the one-hit wonders of the 80s and 90s and some other songs too.
I love it. D, we've done another one. Can't wait to be back here next week. Make it big. Wham! Time flies.